When it comes to the word sham, as it's mentioned in the narrations of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, we are talking about the old Syria or the old Sham, or what we call it Levant. And according to the books of geography written in the past, like Mu'jam al-Buldan, volume 1, page 103, that place, that region known as Sham in the past, includes five regions. Damascus, the city of Damascus, that nowadays it is in Syria, Homs, Qennasrin, these three cities, and then Palestine and Jordan. So right. This is very important. So right. Today, so Syria...
It's not particularly Syria. Exactly. It could be many other things. Exactly. I'll ask you more on that after a short break. Sure. Dear listeners, stay tuned with us.
This is the last savior which comes to you.
Who is the Mahdi?
Longevity.
His training for the mission.
Reasons for his continued existence.
Reasons for delay in his appearance.
Al-Mahdi, in light of hadith.
Al-Mahdi, in light of Quranic verses.
Women in the Imam's army.
The completion of knowledge.
The last savior.
The question comes in my mind. What next? What next?
The final victory.
There are references to a person who will come as the savior of mankind.
I know he's one of the Ahl Bayt and the last one, and he's going to change the world.
Welcome back. You're listening to Last Savior. This is IRIB English Radio. I'm with Dr. Karimi, and Dr. Karimi is helping us to know about Sufyani, who is one of the certain signs of reappearance. We're talking about the place of his uprising.
Yeah, as I mentioned, according to the first group of the narrations, he will begin his uprising from Sham. But Sham in such narrations is referring to the old understanding and sense of the word. And according to the books of geography, it's not limited to Syria, but it also includes Palestine and Jordan, or at least some parts of these two countries.
So as we have a modern world, we have more borders. But when we go back to time, exactly. We do not have enough borders. So it could not mean exactly Syria.
Definitely. So because nowadays some people read the narrations about Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, and they read about all these signs, they come across the word Sham and they just understand it to be today Syria. But this is not the case. It might be, but it's not limited to Syria. It includes at least two other countries, Palestine and Jordan. So this is a very important point regarding the term Sham as mentioned in the narrations. So this is the first group of the narrations according to which Sufyani comes from Sham. And as I mentioned, it includes five regions at least. The second group of the narrations talk about a region called Al-Wadi Al-Yabis. Literally, it means a dried land. There are some narrations in this regard in Kamaluddin, page 651, chapter 57, hadith number 9, and Al-Ghiba by Nu'mani, page 317, hadith number 16. Let me just share one narration in this regard from Imam As-Sajjad alayhi salam, who says, ثم يخرج السفياني الملعون من الوادي اليابس. So the Imam is talking about different events before the reappearance of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, and one of them is the uprising of Sufyani, and Imam calls him Al-Mal'un, the accursed one, and he will come from Al-Wadi Al-Yabis, the dried land. This is in Al-Ghiba by Sheikh Tusi, page 444, hadith number 437. And the third group of the narration refer to the fact that Sufyani will come from Al-Maghrib, from the west.
Okay.
And I will explain what do we mean by this word.
I can feel your eyes like the sun shining behind the clouds. I need a morning to shatter this long night forever. I need a hero to stop this thousand-year-old
Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam is quoted as saying, يَخْرُجُ عَلَيْهِمْ الْخُرَاسَانِ وَالْسُفْيَانِ. There will be the uprising of Khurasani and Sufyani. هَذَا مِنَ الْمَشْرِقِ وَهَذَا مِنَ الْمَغْرِبِ. Khurasani from the east and Sufyani from the west.
Okay.
This is in Al-Ghiba by Nu'mani, chapter 14, page 262, hadith number 13. But there are no contradiction between these three groups of the narrations. First of all, when the narrations, at least this narration, talks about East and West, it does not mean what we today understand by Western countries and Eastern
as
countries.
As we said, the same regarding Sham.
Exactly.
That, today's
yeah.
Sham is not the Sham of that time. So that time, if it's mentioned in West, so it's not today's West.
Exactly. So it seems that the addresses of the imams in these narrations are the people of Iraq. So considering the country of Iraq, Khorasan or Iran is on the east.
All right.
And Sham or Syria is in the west.
West.
So Al-Maghrib in this narration is not referring to what today we understand by West and Western countries. It is referring to the west of Iraq. And we know that Sham or Syria is on the west of Iraq as well.
All right.
And when the Imam says that Khorasani comes from the east, it means the eastern part of Iraq, which is Iran, and also Khorasan is a part of it. So there is no contradiction between the first group and the third group of the narration. What about Al-Wadi Al-Yabis? The point is that, according to the books of geography, Al-Wadi Al-Yabis is one of the regions in Sham, in Syria, as mentioned in Al-Ansab, volume 5, page 674. And there is also one narration in this regard. Imam Ali alayhi salam is quoted as saying, السفياني يخرج من ناحية مدينة دمشق في واد يقال له واد اليابس. Sufyani will come from a region in Damascus which is called Al-Wadi Al-Yabis. And another narration from Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam, فإذا زالت الشمس, when the sun sets, صرخ صارخ من مغاربها يا معاشر الخلائق. A person will call out and he will say that, O people, and of course this person is coming from the army of Sufyani, he will call out, من الواد اليابس من أرض فلسطين وهو عثمان بن عنبسة. He refers to the names, to the name of this person, and the fact that he is one of the offspring of Yazid ibn Muawiyah. We talked about the lineage of Sufyani in the past. So putting together all these narrations, Sufyani will come from Sham, but Sham in these narrations is referring to, as I mentioned, Damascus,
the Sham of the old times, not today's
Jordan,
Sham.
And Palestine.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Dr. Karimi. Dear listeners, we had been analyzing the places where there would be uprising of Sufyani. And we said it would be Sham, which at least includes five regions, not today's Syria. And it would be a dried land and on the west, not today's west. Dr. Karimi has said all that. You can also listen back to our episode on our official website, that's parstoday.com. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Where is the rising sun? Where is the spring of life? Where is the shining moon? Where is the firmest rose? Please, oh please, please come.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
The limelight.
Millions of Americans are about to be forced to cut up to $258 a month out of their grocery budgets as emergency food stamps suddenly end in March. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Business Insider noted millions of Americans are staring down a potential hunger cliff come March, and many may not be aware that they are about to lose hundreds from their grocery budget. That's because yet another pandemic-era benefit is winding down and is likely to leave older adults with fixed incomes scrambling amidst high food prices. As HuffPost first reported, 16 million households will see their benefits drop by $82 a person, what the Food Research and Action Center, FRAC, estimates is the average amount that every SNAP participant will lose a month. Beginning in March 2020, SNAP was expanded to allow households to receive the maximum benefit instead of income testing and allocating aid based on how much they earned. That meant that a household of one, generally an older adult, went from getting $23 a month to $281, according to Gina Plata, deputy director for SNAP at FRAC. At the same time, the lowest earners who are normally eligible for the most assistance received an additional $95 on top of the benefit. But the omnibus passed in December stipulated that those emergency allotments will come to an end in March, marking yet another example of federal social policy abruptly winding down. That means the recipients getting $281 will fall back to $23, a $258 decrease. Instead, the enhanced SNAP benefits will go the way of enhanced unemployment benefits, free school lunches, and the child tax credit. All provided a safety net and helped keep hunger at bay for many Americans. But there is little legislative appetite to renew them. The following map shows not only which states are facing an abrupt cutoff of SNAP benefits soon, but just how many households will be affected. The states in gray in the map already have had the emergency allotment expire. As seen in a map, around 30 states and Washington, D.C. would be affected by the abrupt cutoff of SNAP benefits. Based on figures from FRAC, 393,341 households in Alabama, for instance, would receive emergency allotments of SNAP in February 2023. That's about 200 households per 1,000 American households in the state. D.C. and New Mexico may feel the largest impact from this cutoff based on estimates per 1,000 American households. Now, Plata said states are scrambling to get the word out to residents that their benefits are being dramatically reduced. Plata said, "The last thing you want is Grandma Sue showing up to the grocery store all of a sudden like, 'Where is my money? This is what I had budgeted.' That's the hunger cliff that we're facing in the U.S. That people had this budget, things haven't gotten better. And now you're going to a grocery store where things are more expensive. And those grocery shoppers are also coming up against higher prices, especially on essentials like milk, eggs, and orange juice. According to data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the price of a gallon of whole milk has increased from $3.74 in December 2021 to $4.21 in December 2022. Prices for a dozen large grade A eggs saw a massive uptick from November to December, $3.59 to $4.25, and hugely up from the year before, when they were $1.79. Some states in the U.S. are stepping in to try and fill the gap left by the end of beefed up SNAP benefits. New Jersey increased the minimum benefit that residents can receive, and Massachusetts is moving to try and keep payments higher for 3 months, albeit at 40% of what recipients get now. But the loss of benefits wholesale will have a real human toll and a ripple effect on local economies. Plata added, in this regard, one of the things that we forget is that for every dollar that American people spend on a SNAP, it stays in the local economy and it translates to about $1.70 to $1.80 in increased economic activity. Those losing emergency allotments will still see the same high prices and rents, but they will have less money. You will going to see, as the months go along, more American families being hungry, more people visiting food banks, and just seeing the terrible effects that this had on all of these people.
This is A to Z. an introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, moderation. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of moderation in the Islamic lifestyle. We know that anything that is being used in the excessive way is harmful for the mankind. And if we exceed the limits in any case, that is harmful. Therefore, it is better to follow the way which is moderate. And we must follow the moderate way. The reason is that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has created everything through justice. And He wants us to observe this justice in our life. Therefore, when we observe the justice in our life, we become muttaqi, or we get closer to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. In order to have an Islamic lifestyle, it is necessary to have a moderate lifestyle, to not exceed the limits, which means that if we have wealth, we should not waste that. We should not become extravagant. We must not do israf in our life. And this moderate way will take us to the success. It will take us towards the perfection. And therefore, when we look at the Quranic teachings, even in the Quranic teachings, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said, وَمَا خَلَقْنَا السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضَ وَمَا بَيْنَهُمَا إِلَّا بِالْحَقِّ. We have not created this, the heavens and the earth and whatever is in between them, except the truth. Now, this truth means that there is no excessive in it. There is no extravagance in it. It has been created with the moderation amongst the creatures. Therefore, we must observe this moderation in our life in order to have success in our life, inshallah. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of moderation in the Islamic lifestyle. When we say moderation, it means that we need to observe the moderate way in order to reach to the perfection or have the best Islamic lifestyle. The best Islamic lifestyle cannot be gained without the moderation or having the moderate way of living a life. Therefore, it is necessary upon all of us. When Allah has created everything through the justice, therefore, when we are saying that we need to observe this justice, it means that we need to follow the moderate way. We should not exceed in the limits. And these limits are been said in the Quran and in the Islamic teachings. These limits, which are known as halal and haram, we must observe them. When a person is observing everything which is halal and everything which is forbidden, he avoids that as a haram. He is following the moderate way. Basically, a person who performs a sin, a person who performs the haram things, it means he's exceeding the limits. He has left the moderate way. Similarly, when a person is performing a halal thing, when he is observing the halal or wajibat, the obligatory practices that he has to do or rituals that he is performing, it means that he is following the moderate way. But if he leaves the obligations, the obligatories that he has, then it means that he has left the moderate way. Therefore, the shortcut of following the moderate way in order to have an Islamic life is to perform the obligations, to go for the halal, and to avoid the haram, and to not to perform anything which is haram or forbidden in Islam. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to RIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, RIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution during a meeting with a number of elegists, eulogists, and religious poets in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniya on January 12, 2023. The meeting took place one day before the anniversary of the birth of Lady Fatima al-Zahra, salamullah alayha. I saw that, for example, if we place 10 lines of Imam Hussein's supplication for the day of Arafah, or supplication 47 of Sahifat al-Sajjadiyah, next to those supplications, we will see these 10 lines have more content and greater spirit than all those supplications have together. Well, these emotional states have also aided the country in sensitive times. One being during the Holy Defense. During the Holy Defense, it was the elegists, the poets, these good poets who were truly able to prepare the atmosphere for the great epic event. I have read this verse of a poem many times in this regard. We warm the lovers with the sharpness of our words. We strike the butterfly like the flame of a candle does. This describes your situation. We strike the butterfly like the flame of a candle does. Elegies played a great role in preparing the hearts and increasing the spirituality of the environment. When sending the members of the Basij and others to the front lines, on the nights of military operations, during the military drills, at dawn, during the burial and funeral processions of the martyrs and the mosques and in Husayniyas, on the battlefield and everywhere else.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The holiness that was prevalent in the regions where the Holy Defense was going on was unprecedented and has never occurred anywhere in the world at any time in history, apart from the early days of Islam. A major part of it was related to the elegies, and another part of it was related to other factors. It has been the same in the years after the war and up until today. Elegies have played a great role in various situations. During the sedition in 1388, that is 2009, on the 9th of day of that year, and on various other occasions. I'm repeating these things for you so that as elegist, you can understand your position, what you're doing and what you're capable of doing. This is my intention, thank God. There are many of you as well. When we used to have these meetings in the beginning, only about 100 or 200 people would attend. Today, there are thousands of people across the country who are engaged in the work of reciting elegies and are mastering various techniques for attracting their audiences. This is a great phenomenon that is taking place in the country, and we need to take advantage of it.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
This is all they have to survive with for now. A little crumbling space filled with dirt and garbage. This Rohingya refugee camp on the outskirts of New Delhi is no more than an open prison for the members of the community who face constant threats and intimidation from law enforcement agencies. They say all their activities are being monitored and reported to the local police station on a daily basis. A member of the community is given that task, but that is not the only trouble. This woman says her son has been held in a detention center for months despite having a UN refugee card. With eyes full of tears and a numb voice, she revealed her ordeal.
My son was picked up by police along with his wife from outside our shanty 4 months ago. He did not commit any crime. He has been in a detention center for a long time now. I'm worried for him. The UN Refugee Agency says they are working on the case, but nothing has been done so far. He was working as a day laborer in nearby colonies. He did nothing wrong. I humbly urge for his release. We thank God that India gave us shelter, but there is constant fear of detention in the camp.
In recent weeks, the Delhi High Court ordered a joint inspection of the Rohingya Detention Center in New Delhi by officials of concerned agencies over the alleged lack of basic amenities. The court was hearing a plea of a female refugee who is facing bad health conditions due to the lack of basic facilities in the detention center.
My brother recently got married and he was detained just 3 days after his wedding along with his wife. Since then, he's in a detention center. My mother is blind and she cries every day for him. We have been living here for years and we are grateful to India for giving us refugees. I sell vegetables on the streets and similarly other men do menial work, but we are scared now since detention fear is looming across camps.
Most refugees here have heartbreaking tales of the past, and those memories of carnage and exodus are haunting them. Based on official estimates, India is home to some 40,000 Rohingya refugees, but independent reports put the figures at hundreds of thousands.
Most of the refugees I spoke with feared that their identity would be disclosed, given the high risk of detention. Scores have also gone into hiding at undisclosed locations across India. They have a horrific tales of separation from their families amid a persistent deportation campaign and an intensified crackdown against the community. Munawar Zaman, the outskirts of New Delhi.
Tehran has hosted the first disaster management conference titled Strong Iran. The three-day event has brought together different representatives and experts from various organizations which are responsible for managing natural disasters at the time of crisis. The event is aimed at training responsible organizations to have proper response to natural disasters. Meanwhile, Iran's interior minister addressing the event referred to the earthquakes in Iran, Turkey and Syria and said that the country should maintain its readiness more than ever before.
These events are a warning that we must maintain our preparation more than ever in the past, and dealing with natural disasters requires a modern and not a traditional approach, and the dimensions of these events must be controlled with the help of managerial, human, software and equipment skills.
Iran has been a very disaster-prone country throughout its history. Earthquakes, floods, droughts, inversion effects of air pollution in metropolitans have occurred many times, affected millions of people, and have claimed hundreds of thousands of lives during the past century. According to the World Risk Report, Iran is among the countries with high vulnerability in the world. More than 80,000 people have died during the past 30 years in Iran, directly by natural disasters. The main objective of crisis management is to identify and prioritize crisis threats to formulate the best strategy for confronting the most immediate ones. Accordingly, holding such an event provides a good opportunity for officials and people to be prepared at the time of crisis. Salman Kujuri, Tehran.
Lives have been saved in Turkey following recent earthquakes because the country had access to heavy lifting machinery. Experts say many lives were lost in Syria because sanctions prevented the country from having similar equipment. The catastrophe has just been debated in the European Parliament.
Following the disaster, I contacted one of the largest aid agencies in Syria. I've spoken to Italian agencies and other NGOs. They all told me that the EU sanctions present an obstacle to humanitarian work.
European Commission officials told legislators that just 9 of the EU's 27 member states have supplied Syria with support. 21 have scrambled to help Turkey.
The Commission also allocated an additional 3.5 million euros in emergency humanitarian funding to help our partners address urgent needs in Syria.
This 3.5 million euro for Syrians pales into insignificance when compared to the 67 billion euro spent by the EU on Ukraine during the past 11 months. Experts have been saying for years that the bloc lacks unity when it comes to Syria.
Countries are acting in their own way. There is no coordinated action. And this is one of the reasons that we're faced with this very big crisis, this mega crisis.
Efforts by Western nations to overthrow President Bashar al-Assad have failed. Critics say interventionism has brought misery to millions of innocent people in the country. Some lawmakers want the pressure to be paused.
In Syria, there are sanctions. We don't want to see more people die in the cold. They don't have medicines. We must put politics aside and human life first.
It's been announced the EU will host a donors summit next month to gather money for the earthquake-hit regions. Political commentators are claiming it's already obvious that the vast majority of the money raised will go to Turkey, not Syria. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
I am visiting a children's hospital in Kabul, which is said to be overwhelmed with malnourished kids. Every few hours, a sick child is brought into the malnourishment ward, while doctors and nurses are racing against time to save the youngest victims of Afghanistan's crisis.
Unfortunately, this year, undernourished cases, especially severe acute malnutrition, have significantly surged compared to last year. Constant hunger and poverty and differing diseases are to blame for this, which puts us in dire need of more supplies and medical aid.
As you know, Afghans are gripped with poverty and economic problems. As a result, we are overwhelmed with a huge number of malnutrition. We are running out of bed and sometimes we are forced to reject new entries. Besides, childhood wasting as well as child mortality have also soared.
The World Health Organization says in 2023, around 17,000 Afghan babies and mothers are expected to suffer from severe acute malnutrition, while over 2.3 million children may suffer from moderate acute malnutrition. The UN body adds that an estimated 28.3 million people, which comprises two-thirds of Afghanistan's population, need urgent relief assistance.
We are a family of 10. My husband is a shoemaker. This malnourished child of mine is 3 months old. Two of my children died as a result of wasting and stunting.
Afghan people's miseries are growing day by day. Unemployment, poverty, and famine have gripped the society, with poor and middle-class households being hit hard. Many have brought their malnourished kids here, and I think it is because they have no food in their houses. We are calling on the global community not to ignore Afghans amid political and economic crises.
Concerns are on the rise among Afghans over their isolation from the international community and major cuts in global aid following the Taliban's takeover and U.S. withdrawal from their country. Afghanistan has one of the highest rates of malnutrition in the world. Afghans are calling on the global community not to leave them alone amid poverty and hunger. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Hundreds of people attended a national conference in Gaza, which was organized by Palestinian resistance factions. The event aims to bolster the resistance in Al-Quds and the occupied West Bank. In recent weeks, extremist Israeli settlers and political figures, backed by regime forces, have been violating the sanctity of the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in Al-Quds. Israeli forces have also killed and injured dozens of Palestinians in the occupied West Bank since the beginning of 2023. Speaking to Press TV, the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas said the resistance in Gaza is ready to support the resistance in Al-Quds and the occupied West Bank.
We will not leave the resistance in Al-Quds and the occupied West Bank alone, and we will back them with all the necessary means. The occupying regime will not be able to divide the Palestinian resistance arenas. Last night, we witnessed unity in Gaza, Nablus, and Al-Quds.
Occupied by Israeli regime forces more than 55 years ago, Al-Quds has been at the core of the Palestinian struggle for freedom.
Actually, Al-Quds is not just a word. It's something apart from our heart. So this conference asking and telling the world that this Israeli action against Al-Quds and West Bank must be stopped.
Palestinian resistance factions have expressed their unwavering support for Palestinians in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds. They also vowed to use all forms of resistance to liberate Al-Quds and the occupied West Bank.
We believe that the Israeli government, under the leading of Netanyahu and Smotrich and Ben-Gvir, going to raising up the aggressive against our people in West Bank, in Jerusalem, in Gaza also, maybe in other outside countries also. So we are going to resent the occupation by all kind of resistance.
Observers say the international community has failed to help Palestinians in Al-Quds and the occupied West Bank while turning a blind eye to violations committed by the Israeli regime against them for decades. Palestinians say that they will continue their struggle against the Israeli regime until the liberation of Al-Quds and all of Palestine. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
On Saturday, protests were held in front of the Italian state broadcaster Rai's premises in a number of cities, including Rome, Milan and Naples. The protests had been called against the Rai's decision to read out a message by Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky during the final night of Italy's biggest entertainment TV show of the year, a song contest, which brings millions of viewers together.
Noi oggi siamo.
We are here today to remind our politicians the suffering we had to go through for decades after World War II. This man in the photo is my grandfather. He died during that war. We are against the bellicose propaganda broadcast on state TV.
Earlier this week, state broadcaster Rai opted to withdraw a planned video address by Zelensky at the popular TV show and replace it with the reading of a message sent by the Ukrainian leader.
I would have preferred Zelensky to have been present at the TV show. I've appreciated his decision to send a written message and, above all, I'm sorry about the controversy that was stirred up.
We say no to the politicization of culture, no to Zelensky on our TV shows, no to a man who is leading his country to destruction for a war that had been planned for years by the US.
The move by Rai to host Zelensky has inflamed the debate on the war in Ukraine in Italy, a country where support for Kyiv is more divided than elsewhere in Europe. Since the start of the conflict, surveys in Italy have showed that more than half of the Italians are against supplying Kyiv with more weapons.
Many accuse Rai of providing information which is not impartial because the National Broadcaster's Board of Directors is directly linked to the government and the parliamentary majority. As a matter of fact, following a 2015 reform, 6 out of 7 Rai board directors are elected by the 2 houses of parliament and the government.
Italy's state broadcaster is now more than ever in the hands of the politicians. Rai and the government want Zelensky to appear on the television of millions of Italians to make them believe that this Ukraine war is a good war and that sending weapons to Kyiv is a good thing.
Italy's Prime Minister Meloni has repeatedly said that supporting Ukraine is the best way to reach a possible negotiated settlement with Moscow and that Rome aims to be a lead player in that regard and in Ukraine's reconstruction. Max Civili, Rome.
The National Media Association in Lebanon held a gathering in the capital, Beirut, to show solidarity with the Syrian people who continue to suffer because of the U.S. sanctions imposed under the so-called Caesar Act. The journalists, media figures, politicians and representatives of the resistance front noted that Syria stood with the resistance groups when the world had abandoned Palestine and Lebanon, and that now is the time to stand with Syria.
From Beirut, the National Media Association announces the Beirut Declaration and calls on the Arab and Islamic people and the free people in the world to work on confronting oppression and stopping the wars of sanctions and famine, which are against basic human rights.
The U.S. State Department has claimed that the sanctions do not target humanitarian aid, but Monday's earthquake has proven the opposite.
It's a mere maneuver by the United States just to confront this wave of indictment to the United States, and it's a way for them to reimpose the sanctions in order to achieve their geopolitical agenda. I believe that we need to keep pressuring the United States, exerting pressure, moral and material pressure, in order to lift the sanctions of Syria.
Over 3,000 people have so far died as a result of the catastrophic earthquake in Syria, as rescue teams continue to search for survivors under the rubble of the buildings, which have been completely leveled to the ground. In addition to rescue efforts, the Syrian people are in dire need of essentials like medicine and fuel, which have not been allowed to enter Syria because of the Western sanctions.
They cannot still like turning around sending humanitarian aids to Syria through NGOs or others. It should be through the governments of Syria. After all, the government is doing all the necessary job to help people and to take them to hospitals or to make shelters or so.
On February 6th, the 7.8 magnitude earthquake struck Turkey and Syria, killing thousands in the two countries. While countries like Iran and Russia have sent aid to Syria, the amount of humanitarian assistance that reached the Arab country is still very little compared to the international aid sent to Turkey.
At least five rescue teams from Lebanon headed directly to Syria to provide all the assistance they can of the rescue efforts, yet many are saying the aid that many are providing is not enough. Participants here today stressed that the U.S. and its Western allies need to lift the unjust sanctions against Syria and the Syrian people. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Ibrahim Raisi is in Beijing for a three-day state visit. That's the first such trip by an Iranian president to China in 20 years. Upon his arrival, he was welcomed by his Chinese counterpart, Xi Jinping. During their meeting, the two presidents sounded determined to strengthen the two countries' partnership, both vowing to work toward implementation of the 25-year Strategic Cooperation Pact, whatever international conditions be.
We believe that implementing the 25-year cooperation agreement and realizing what agreed between the two countries' officials today to develop bilateral ties can promote regional and global peace and stability. Certainly, relations between Iran and China will not be affected by international developments, since we're determined to develop ties with China in any circumstances.
China will continue to be committed to consolidating and deepening relations with Iran. I'm willing to work with President Raisi to enhance strategic communication and promote the steady and sustained growth of the comprehensive strategic partnership between the two countries.
Of course, the two presidents had much more to say. Raisi said there is still much more for expanding economic and trade collaboration between the two sides, adding that such collaboration would contribute to peace and stability across the globe. On the other side, Xi hailed China's growing solidarity with Tehran, saying the two countries have supported each other in the face of complex global challenges. He added that China supports Iran's efforts to safeguard its national sovereignty and independence and counter hegemony and unilateralism. Political analyst Christopher Hilali says further deepening of Iran-China ties will greatly strengthen the developments of a multipolar world.
The deepening of ties further strengthens the development of a multipolar world against what both the Chinese and the Iranians said was the ongoing hegemony and unilateralism of Western domination, specifically led by the United States.
Iranian academic Said Mohammad Marandi, who is accompanying the Iranian delegation in Beijing, says the West antagonistic attitude has accelerated convergence among Asian nations.
Asia alone, through this natural convergence, which is being pushed forward even faster, largely due to the fact that the United States and the Europeans are constantly antagonizing governments and sanctioning governments, whether it's Russia, whether it's Iran, and increasingly China, and also by constantly trying to prevent India from establishing greater ties with these Asian powers. The United States and Europeans are pushing these countries towards greater convergence at a faster pace.
Tehran-Beijing cooperation has been only growing over the past couple of years. China has now become Iran's largest trading partner, with figures showing volume of trade between the two rose by over 40% in the previous Iranian calendar year, which ended on March the 20th. Moreover, Iran is joining the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, a key regional bloc where China is a co-founder. Iran is also eager to contribute to China's mega project, the Belt and Road Initiative. China and Iran now appear set to take their partnership to the next level for prosperity of their nations.
In the limelight.
When the term de-dollarization was coined, there was a concrete idea behind it, that the U.S. currency would be uncrowned someday. And when we talk about the U.S. decline, we cannot avoid talking about de-dollarization and the end of dollar hegemony in the world. Believe it or not, the world is going to be multipolar, as world economies are exhausted by the U.S. military and financial bullying. So efforts are underway around the world to topple the dollar. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to Global Times, Russia's finance ministry said will reset the share of euro in its National Wealth Fund, NWF, starting from this year, leaving only gold, Chinese yuan, and rubles, Russian media reported recently. It not only means the drastic change to Russia's sovereign reserve structure as a strategic power, but also directly promotes the internationalization of yuan to a higher level, analysts claimed, noting that such move will also result in further de-dollarization. Vladimir Kolichekov, Russia's deputy finance minister, was quoted as saying, "If the question is whether the euro will be reset, then it will definitely be reset this year. The fund will consist of up to 60% yuan and no more than 40% gold, and Russia may add rubles to the sovereign wealth fund." Previously, the yuan accounted for 30%, while gold accounted for 20%, according to Russian media. As of February 1, 2023, the NWF held 10.46 billion euros, 307.44 billion yuan, 551.27 tons of gold, and 530.1 million rubles in its accounts, according to a report by the Russian Ministry of Finance. Cutting the euro out of the NWF is in essence a continuation of Russia's earlier systematic de-dollarization policy. Considering that there are few options in the global currency market for benchmarking the US dollar system based on fintech, economic strength, and trade skill, the yuan system is objectively the best solution for the de-dollarization of Russia and other countries. Chen Jia, an independent analyst on international strategy, told the Global Times recently. This could be seen from the expanded yuan trading across the Moscow bourse after Western countries imposed sanctions on Russian financial institutions in 2022. Yuan accounted for 48% of foreign exchange trading on the Moscow exchange in November 2022, up from 0.2% at the start of the year. RT also wrote in this regard, famed writer and economist Robert Kiyosaki has warned investors that the stock markets are about to crash and the U.S. economy is heading into a depression. According to the Rich Dad Poor Dad co-author, this will be fueled by the fact that the U.S. Federal Reserve will print billions in fake money. Giant crash is coming. Depression possible, Kiyosaki tweeted recently. He explained that this will be because faith in the US dollar, fake money, will be destroyed. This is not the first time Kiyosaki has tweeted about an approaching market crash. He has made several similar warnings, tweeting that everything will crash, including the prices of gold,
silver, and Bitcoin. This has caused some skepticism regarding his predictions. Recently, Kiyosaki predicted an impending collapse of the financial markets, which could happen, he said, as early as this week. Analysts noted that he probably attributed the worsening of market conditions to U.S. inflation data, which is due on February 14th. Kiyosaki urged people not to panic and to increase their exposure to strong assets. Meanwhile, RT in a separate article wrote, Moscow and Tehran intend to further increase the share of their national currencies in mutual settlements, Russia's Deputy Foreign Minister Andrei Rudenko said recently, adding that the sides have been strengthening cooperation in the banking sector. We will continue to work with Iran, stimulating trade operations in national currencies. In 2021, the share of settlements in national currencies exceeded 60%. The positive trend continues.